kind of like the idea of using this podcast as a little test run for stuff like my weird, dumb sci-fi fantasy book idea or whatever. So tomorrow I got to do my little Andrew Plotkin speech, so I'm going to do it right now, just quietly in my basement, one last run through to make sure it's under 10 minutes, and just for posterity, I don't know. Hello, welcome to Wordplay 2014. My name's Keith, and I'm here to introduce one of our featured speakers, Mr. Andrew Plotkin. Now, Andrew is most well known for interactive fiction, text games, and since we're at Wordplay, you probably know what those are. But you never know at the reference library. I mean, we get kind of a general crowd. Sometimes people just come in to get out of the sun. So I'm just going to spend a minute talking about interactive fiction and Andrew's games, just so we're all kind of on the same level. So interactive fiction, text adventures, kind of had their initial heyday back in the 80s. And that's when my family got our first personal computer. It was just, you know, one of those beige boxes with a green and black monochrome monitor. It's kind of like a really expensive Game Boy. And it had those 5 1/4 inch floppy disks, and piracy was rampant, as it is still today. So my dad would come home with boxes of these disks, and me and my brother would go through them and try all these games that he got. And you know, most games back then, the graphics weren't that good. And even if they were, they were green and black. So really, the best games of the time, definitely the most sophisticated games, were the games that had no graphics at all. Just the text adventures. And if you never played one of these games before, just as an example, like you'd turn it on and the text on screen would say, "You awaken in a dimly lit room. There's a table here with a lamp on it and exits to the east, west, and south." They were really big on cardinal directions back then, you know, 1980s video games, very regimented. So you would type, "Get lamp." And the game would say, "You pick up the lamp." And you'd type, "Go east." And the game would say, "You go east into a pitch black hallway where you fall down some stairs and break your neck. If only you had a light source, game over." And we started to learn that these games were extremely brutal. It's not enough to pick up a lamp. It's not even enough to turn on a lamp. You gotta get a wick. You gotta get lighter fluid that won't work. So then maybe some gasoline and probably some flint. Like, it's been said a lot that these games weren't even about really figuring out the puzzles. They were more about psychoanalyzing the person who wrote the game. Because you could have a perfectly good solution, but if that guy didn't think of it, didn't implement it into the game, it's not going to work. So we loved those games, but I think me and my brother probably beat, I'm going to say, a grand total of, I think, 0 of them. And then we got a new computer, and we got another new computer, and graphics got better and better. And they reached a point where text games just kind of faded away. They just weren't really financially viable anymore. Maybe because everyone was pirating them. Sorry. But they weren't gone for long because the internet became a thing. Did you hear that? I forgot what I was going to say. You might be surprised to learn, or not surprised to learn, that early adopters of the internet were the same type of people that really had a fondness for really brutally difficult, highly regimented games that didn't have any graphics. So they'd go on newsgroups and talk about these games, and interactive fiction is what they called them, and that's the name that really stuck. And ironically, the golden age of interactive fiction wasn't the 80s when you could make a living from writing these games. It was in the 90s and the 2000s and now. Because money really makes things rigid, you know? You look at what was popular before, and you try to kind of do the same thing, and you don't want to break the mold too much. Where now that money wasn't an issue and people were making games for each other, they wanted to break the mold. They wanted their game to stand out. They wanted people to notice it. So a competition sprung up where they gave awards to the best games each year. And I know that number of awards won is not necessarily the best way to, really gauge the value of someone's art. But Andrew Plotkin's games have won more awards than anyone else. And I think that's worth bringing up. I mean, you can't give awards to yourself, you know? Year after year, people played Andrew's games and they were like, "Man, that was pretty good. Like, I think we need to give that man some awards." Andrew was one of the first IF authors to really have, like, a sense of poetry in his games, or just, like, really well written and just had, they had really evocative imagery. He wrote this game called A Change in the Weather. It was about a guy trapped in a rainstorm. But as the day turns to night and as the rain gets harder and harder, the descriptions of the environments change with the way that the weather's affecting them. And when lightning crashes, I mean, it was crazy. It was like a book, but kind of better because you're in it, you know? Just a really beautiful game. And he really played a lot with the conventions of how these games are played. He has a game called Spider and Web where it starts, you're in front of a locked door. So like, all right, let's try to figure out how to get through this door. And you make a few moves, and then the game cuts to a scene of you in an interrogation chair. And the interrogator is saying, that's not what happened. Look, we know you broke into our facility, we caught you. Tell us how you did it. And you realize that by playing this game, you're actually telling a story to your captor about how you broke into his facility, and it has to be plausible enough for him to buy, but holding back enough details to help you get out of the situation you're in now. It's just like, man, like I think sometimes when I'm reviewing stuff, would I have been able to think of that? And in the case of Spider and Web, like, never. I would never think of that. That is a really clever game. So Andrew's games are extremely influential, and you can see that influence like cascade down through the years. But when I asked people what they thought I should bring up about his work, it wasn't even necessarily the games. A lot of people said that possibly even more enduring is the tech work that he's done. Now, that's not something that I know very much about. I went on the IF Wiki and I looked up the names of programs that are very complicated sounding and hard to pronounce. Oh, had to burp. That doesn't count. Oh no, did I really forget what I was going to say? But basically, gotta do this tomorrow. But basically, Andrew is one of just a small handful of people that has really helped bring interactive fiction to different mediums and to help the games themselves be more robust. Has really just kept things kind of at the forefront. Kept the technology at the forefront, I should say. And he's here today to talk about his new game, Hadean Lands, that just came out for the iPhone. And I feel like it kind of encapsulates all these things. The game itself really stretches the boundaries of what interactive fiction can do. It's on this new platform, the iPhone, that makes it more accessible to a whole new group of people. It even kind of harkens back to those glory days of the 80s when you might be able to make some money with these games. And on top of all that, the software that he wrote to make this game, he's released to the public as open source. So anyone else who wants to make a game for the iPhone can go down the path that Andrew has already blazed. Really, just the amount he gives to the interactive fiction community is, it's ridiculous. And we're extremely lucky to have him both here today and just in general. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you could, please put your hands together for Mr. Andrew Plotkin. Yeah, clap, clap, clap. What are we looking at here? Nice, even with that part where I fucked up and forgot, 8 minutes, so that's not bad. Maybe I even have the luxury of talking a little slower. Like, I really don't want to drag on too long, but I don't want to talk too fast. But I'll probably talk fast anyway, just from being in front of people. All right, so what was the part that I fucked up? It was after I was talking about his tech that I don't really know what it does, but basically all it does is it allows games to be played on multiple platforms and helps the games themselves be more robust. Okay, good, I got it. I got this shit, I got this shit. Oh, I got this shit, yeah. I'm an alligator. I'm a mama, papa coming for you. I'm a space invader. All right, it is the morning of me doing my little intro. Did I ever really explain what this thing is? It's called wordplay. I ended up going last year just by accident or whatever. Me and Brad went, not by accident, but it was because the Kentucky Route Zero guys were there giving a talk. I think Brad told me about it. And now in the ensuing year, I've gotten to know people that run this thing, got asked to do an intro. But it's at the Reference Library at Yonge and Bloor. That's the big library in Toronto, where if you read the Scott Pilgrim comics, it's where Knives and Ramona have a big fight. I don't think it was in the movie, but, and it's just like a whole festival, like all kinds of shit like this happens in Toronto, but it's like a day-long thing about literary sort of video games. So the whole library has all these like setups and talks and all this cool stuff. Sorry, I'm getting confused by the internet, distracted. And so this year it's this guy, Andrew Plotkin, who is a pretty famous interactive fiction text adventure guy, as I guess you heard me just blab about. And I can't remember the last time I did a public speaking thing. I guess it must have been the Keith and the Girl roast. So, I mean, that's been a few years now. And when I was a kid, I used to do speeches all the time. Not always, but a lot of the time I would volunteer to go first, which does not make anyone else in the class like you very much. They're like, really? We're all shitting ourselves and this little fuck is gonna go first? I mean, I was in grade 1 through 6, all of elementary. It was all the same class. No one was thinking that. We were all friends. But nobody else was volunteering to go first. And it really is like, not only do you get it out of the way and you don't have to sit there worrying about it, because the worry is absolutely the worst part. It's far worse, I find, than the actual talking. It's the build up and the lead up to it. But then also just the teacher would always be so impressed if you're willing to go first, like goodness. And I remember I went to like a regional thing at least once. I don't know. But, and last night I managed to get to bed pretty early, so that's good. The speech is until 12:30, and right now it's 8:30 in the morning. And so I didn't get as much sleep as I wanted. I woke up a couple times to go pee, because I was probably nervous, and I always have to pee. And man, my literal brain, where the only dream I remember was, I was at like a bar or something, and Andrew Plotkin was there. I know what he looks like because of a documentary. This documentary called Get Lamp. That he was in. And I just introduced myself to him. Hey buddy, I'm Andrew Plotkin. I mean, I'm Keith McNally. And we blabbed a little. And it turned out the two other guys at the table were text adventure people that he recognized. So they all started talking. And we started talking about this game called Braminar that me and all my friends were obsessed with growing up. It's this really awesome game that no one really knows about and just kind of disappeared, where you're like a questing warrior and it random events keep happening and you just go through the different random events until you can build up enough of a character to either die or to beat the game. I always thought it should be brought back and you could always just... I started writing a Braminar 2 when I was a kid in like GW Basic because, you know, you can just add in more and more random scenarios and stuff. It's really a pretty genius little format that never really got taken advantage of. And I remember in my dream I was taking notes on my phone about what these guys were talking about for an advanced Braminar, like what they would do, and I don't remember any of the things, but it's just like, yeah, these are all the interactive fiction geniuses talking about this game. I gotta fucking get this down. And then I woke up about, you know, an hour or so ago, 7-ish, a little after 7, and I woke up feeling nervous, just feeling kind of heart pumping, bit of a headache, just wishing I could fall back asleep, but just knowing like, oh, it's probably not gonna happen at this point. So, I don't know, I guess this is like the true test, right, of all this blabbing I've been doing about how exercise and changing how your body feels changes how your mind feels. And man, so far it totally is working. I mean, I haven't even exercised proper yet. It's good that I'm awake early now. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do like 4 sets. I'm going to do everything this morning. I'm going to do the whole thing. I was thinking I'd probably even have time. I could walk. I mean, it would be like literally a 3-hour walk, but I have time. But I probably won't do that. I think the exercising is more important, and then I'll get some walking in. But I used to do a thing where I was having a really hard time sleeping right before I left Toronto, and even when I left, all the way up, I guess, until this exercising, really hard time sleeping. So I was taking sleeping pills like every night, literally every night. If I did that for like 3 months, that's just like, I just am tired of how this is. I just am tired of being tired all the time. And I'm just gonna, I gotta change this, and I don't care what it takes. And it kind of worked, it did help a bit. But then, yeah, once I started exercising, I noticed I only had two of those sleeping pills left, and I've had them this 2 whole months. I just haven't used them. I kept thinking like, well, I guess I should go buy some more, but I never needed to. But I did use one yesterday and the day before just to kind of get my schedule back to something reasonable. But on top of the sleeping pills, I would count down from 100. And I found that works pretty well. It's pretty hard to get to zero, you know, and if you do, if you actually count all the way from 100 to zero and you haven't fallen asleep, then just get up. Just get up and do something else, because it ain't going to happen. But generally, you know, somewhere in the 70s or the 60s, my mind would start to wander and I'd forget what number I was at, and I'd repeat numbers, and then you just fall asleep. So this morning, I kind of tried that combined with breathing. Like, such a huge amount of all the exercise stuff Elliot Hulse talks about is about breathing, and that's what kind of what yoga is all about, and a lot of meditation stuff. So I laid there and I just breathed in and breathed out as deep as I could and just counted down from 100 each time. And by the time I got to like 70, like, just, I just didn't feel nervous anymore. It's crazy. I'm just laying there and I'm just like, I just don't feel it. I started searching for it, like, where's the nervousness? And I just couldn't even find it. And it's like, that is so fucking insane. That's all I did was just start breathing. But then I decided I was also like, I should jerk off. You know, I should get that out of the way today, so it's not, that's not something clogging up my brain, and just because it'll feel good. And I've got an XO that's coming out soon. I don't know, it'll come out right around the same time as this episode, where I talk a lot about, it's just called feminism, and it's about, I brought it up a little bit on one of these ham radios, that I was like having these just like weird, clearly unhealthy, like laying in bed just jerking off, thinking about different girls that I knew in the past, but like all these really just abusive, awful scenarios. And I would really feel bad about it. Or if I need to jerk off just quick, that's always the porn I would go to. Like, all right, I don't have time to do this in any kind of sensible fashion, but you can just, I could like short circuit my brain. It's like crossing the wires, just like, whoa, I can come so fast by watching all this weird choke porn and crazy fucked up shit. But I always felt real bad about it, you know? Or even if I didn't feel real bad right away, it's like the check was in the mail. It was always coming. So the XO really talks about my mindset, as far as like, just that I really want to have a better attitude about men and women in relationships and sex. And I really feel like a lot of bad, creepy, weird stuff has been internalized by me, and it's, you know, it's not serving me very well. But here on Down and Dirty Ham Radio, I can get a little more explicit than fancy pants fucking XO. And say that what I did was, I was thinking of this girl, Kate, that I used to know in Vancouver. We worked at the same movie theater, and we went on a few dates, and we slept together like once, and I don't know, my head was all messed up, and I was about to move again, and I didn't want to, she must have found it real weird. She was really trying, you know, trying to go on dates with me and wearing low-cut shirts and like, come on, dude, come on, play with my boobs, like, do something. And I mostly just, besides the one time, I just kind of kept her at bay, just because I don't know what I thought. I had broken up with Erica, my brain was all messed up. But really, she was just like really cool and really cute, and like, that was the perfect example of, I guess that was it too, is like, I just also didn't feel like I was in love with her, and I just broke up with Erica, and it's like, well, if it's not going to be Erica, then it's going to be no one or whatever. But she really is like a great example of a person I knew where we could have just been friends and just had just fun sex. It could have just been casual if I had been capable of such a thing. So I was thinking about her, because that was, you know, it's like, I don't want to cut off masturbation. I don't want to cut off thinking about sex. I don't even really want to cut off porn necessarily, but like my porn now, it's purely just super soft, just naked girls. That's it. Because it does seem like hardcore porn. The more I learn about it, man, it is just a bad scene. And it's like nobody really seems to get in it. Like, I always used to think, just to sidetrack to porn for a sec, like, the only way the porn industry would make sense to me, really, is if women ran it. It always seemed to me like women should be the ones running this operation. It was so weird to me that it's guys. Like, the guys should just be the dicks for hire, you know? Like, for it to be any kind of a sensible, sane enterprise, you know, that treated people well and was just like it. I never understood why women don't run porn more often or have their own porn studios and stuff. They do sometimes, but... Or I would think, like, if I was going to get into porn, like, I would really try to get some money together and sort of fund my own productions. Not to mention that that's where all the money is, not just the here's $2,000 to get banged for, you know, one-time payment. Just, you know, to fucking produce these things, distribute them, get the whole fucking operation running. And if it was all women running stuff, it would just be such a better thing, just so much more healthy, because just the more you learn about porn, it does seem like it's almost not an exaggeration to say, like, that no one gets into it. It's like that guy in the TED Talk, he said no one gets into porn, and that, you know, like, they're always coming from a place of, how did he even put it? I don't know, just not a healthy place, really. And it does always seem to be true. Like, one of the big beacon kind of people was Sasha Gray, where she would always talk about how she got into porn to, you know, as a career move, you know, and she would always talk about how she read philosophy books and was really smart and was in control of herself, and it really seemed true because she built her porn career into an acting career, into, like, a bit of a music career. But then she came out and said that really she got into porn because she had this weird abusive boyfriend guy who coerced her into it. And that had been going on for years. And it's like, oh, fuck. Again, this happens. Like, it happens over and over. And of course it doesn't. Like, that's why when girls get into porn, they don't, like, they don't come into it from a place of, like, mighty self-esteem that I'm going to run this place and I'm going to make my own stuff. And I guess it's just, that's logical that they wouldn't, because... yeah, I don't know, the porn situation in North America and wherever, it's just bad. It's just not a good thing. So, yeah, I've been not watching, like, just, I don't know, we'll see, I guess, where it goes with porn. But for now, just for this, trying to sort of rewire myself and reprogram myself, just purely super soft core, that's all. And as far as just, like, laying in bed thinking about stuff, it's like, yeah, like, that's a good one. I can just think of me and that girl, Kate, just hanging out, having fun, watching a movie. Like, that was what we did, and then we banged, you know? If I had just been a little more fucking together, we could have banged a bunch more, and it would have been fun. And I guess that's the thing, too, is, like, these sort of thoughts, they aren't, like, this supercharged feeling of just watching really weird, fucked up porn where you also get that the crossed wire of, like, the power play and, like, the commanding, like, I'm the dude and look at how much I control you. But you're still jerking off. It still feels real, real good. Like, it's as a consolation prize, it's fine, you know? Like, and it really is better because it doesn't come with this baggage and this after feeling of feeling terrible. So I'm really, I don't know, it's been almost a week now, I guess. And even that, like, I just kind of, to kind of help guide myself in this direction, it's like anytime I feel like jerking off, I just do. I don't deny myself at all. It's like you can jerk off as much as you want, anytime you want, all day. But it just has to be normal. It has to be sensible. It has to be something healthy. It can't be this weird shit. So it's great. I just, like, look forward to it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to jerk off. Not only am I going to jerk off, it does kind of take longer for me to get into it and for me to like finish, but then that's fun because I get to spend more time jerking off, and I just feel fine after. Like, I mean, I feel great right now and I just totally jerked off. So what I did, or even just because I'm like, hey, it's a special day, I'm doing my little speech, maybe I'll try something different. So I've got these condoms in my drawer that, I mean, I don't know when the fuck I'm ever going to use those. And I don't know, maybe having foreskin helps with this. I feel like having foreskin helps with a lot of things. It's fucking insanely mental that everyone just cuts their dicks up and just is like, yeah, that's cool. That's how my dad was. That's what society does. It's fucking insane. It's stupid. If you ever circumcise your kid, you're a piece of shit. I just want you to know that. But so I put on a condom and then I put a sock over my dick and just kind of, oh man, like it's surprisingly accurate feeling to just like then just like rubbing myself against my bed real slow. And it's just like, man, it's like the sock kind of holds the condom, and then the condom has, you know, that membraney sort of somewhat moist feeling or whatever. It's extremely similar to a vagina, and it's kind of fucking weird and messy and a little bit to deal with, but not so much. I mean, you know, the condom catches your cum, right? The sock keeps all the weird lubrication of the condom from getting on anything else. It felt pretty good, man. Cheers to you, Kate. I'm glad we got to hang out, because, man, you gave me some good feelings today in my memory. So basically, that's it. I just real deep breathing, and then this jerking off. Like, kind of the weird feeling I had as I was fucking coming is, like, I think I said a couple episodes back, like, this is so weird, whatever, of, like, when I'm just walking around feeling cool, and feeling like a bit like, yeah, I'm a person on the earth, I belong here, I fit in, like everything is going so cool, that it would remind me of just when I was a kid driving around with all the cool older dudes that I knew who were like had like their 70s muscle cars and always listened to 70s music and were just like cool dudes. And I just felt like that. I was like, oh, Kate, I wish I could have another chance with you and I could show you that I'm cool now. We could just be cool. Things could just be fun, and it wouldn't be so neurotic and fucking ridiculous, and you're just trying to let me play with your boobs. But anyway, point is, I don't feel nervous, I just feel good, everything feels awesome. I'm gonna exercise now, and I'll feel even more awesome. Oh, man. I don't know. I just am really glad things are kind of turning out okay. Whew, I mean, yeah, it was one thing to just all this weird shakeup of coming back to Toronto for a girl and causing problems in her life and problems in everyone's lives and all this weird shakeup and just like, oh, you know, it's a shame that all that happened, that I was so out of my mind that I'm just like a kamikaze man, just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just like fucking bouncing around like a fucking pinball. But it all is kind of working out. I mean, it was like, you know, when my plan was to move to Newfoundland or Vancouver or whatever, it was because I knew I needed a shakeup. I needed to fucking do something with my life because it was just getting stuck. And this ended up being a different, weird kind of shakeup, but it was like enough of a shakeup to like, time to, you know, it's like it really is hard to examine yourself when you're not hurt, you know? When you're feeling hurt, it's like, all right, now I need to examine myself. I need to examine what's going on. I need to understand how I got here, because it does feel like survival, kind of. Like, I need to do this right now. So you just have this focus that you wouldn't have otherwise. And I was thinking, it's been 2 months, like a sixth of a year, that I have just been sitting in this apartment stewing over things, but it's like, this is like the laboratory. This is where I'm figuring shit out. And I think particularly with this like real realization that I'd just been harboring all this strange misogyny and just intimidation feelings about women and nervousness and like not being able to just relate to them normally was causing me so many problems. I feel like this is the real cherry on top. Like, this is really where I was trying to get to. All this other stuff has been nice, meditation and exercise, and it's all very useful and helpful. But that's like, I feel like the real root one, like the thing that was so deep down that I really couldn't see it. It took a long time for me to understand it, and now I'm starting to understand it. And I really think all this stuff is going to be so valuable. Like, I think this turned out better if I had just gone off to Newfoundland or gone off to Vancouver. I don't know, maybe that could have almost just been like, you know, shaking the Etch-a-Sketch and just starting over and making some new friends and stuff and not having to learn about any of this stuff. I don't know what would have happened with that. That would have been really weird. Whereas now I've ended up back in Toronto and, you know, stuff's going kind of cool. Like, I'm doing this thing today, this little speech. And man, the other day on Wednesday, what a good day. I woke up and I got a text from Joel's wife that asked if I could go babysit their kids for the afternoon. And like I was talking about the idea of helping yourself, the easiest way to help yourself ultimately is to help other people. And I think that's why I've always liked babysitting. I mean, I just like kids, they're fun. But like when I used to babysit my niece or babysitting Joel's kids, it's like, yeah, if I can help out this family and help out this situation, then it makes me feel good too. And it's just fun. It's like this, just a good thing. So I went and did that for the afternoon. Then for the evening, I went to this guy, Earl, that I met through the Hand-Eye Society. I was on his podcast once before I left Toronto, so I did another episode of that that's coming out at the end of November. And then I went to this dude Jason's house that I've kind of known a little here and there, but I really, now I've been trying to make more of an effort to hang out with them. And we both watch wrestling, so I went to his house, and me and him and his other friend Ben, we're all from the East Coast, and we all just sat around and watched wrestling all night. And like, what a good day, man. Just so good. Like, I think coming back to Toronto maybe is okay. Maybe I will hang out in Toronto for a bit. It seems like it's going pretty well. And yeah, I still feel bad about the little rift in the friendships and problems with this person, problems with that person. But I mean, I do feel bad about that, full stop. There is really, that's all. But but things had been a little stagnant, you know? We'd been in kind of our same little friend group for 3 or 4 years, you know? And it just, things, I'm not saying they needed to be shaken up, but now that they are shaken up, like, stuff is happening. Stuff is coming of it. I hope it's going okay on the other side as well. I don't know. But at least on my side, you know, I don't know, I'm making new friends, I'm doing stuff, it's cool. All right, now, enough of my blabbing. I got some fucking stretches to do so I can do some exercise. Wish me luck, yo, break a leg, all that.
Along the way to close my eyes, I lost where I was going.
Hey, Keith, just in case you forgot or forget, I was just listening to music while starting my stretches and stuff, and that 311 song Flowing came on, and it's so good, so I hope you just played Flowing, or possibly Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie. Possibly both. Maybe those would be what the two previous musical selections should be. But I was just thinking how I do love having this mirror. It just happens to be set up in the perfect spot where I can see from my mouth down. It's kind of nice in a way because I can just watch my body, but I don't have to see my eyes because I feel like that gets creepy. That could get weird. But it's one of these things where I don't know that people would really notice that I'm more in shape, right? It's not like I'm built. I don't think I would ever look that way, and I kind of don't want to anyway, because as much as I've really earned a new respect for people that are in shape, now that I understand more about not only how physically it's a lot more difficult than I thought it was, as far as overtraining and stretching, and it gets a lot more difficult, but even just mentally, what it takes to get here to do this. But I did see a guy the other day. There's this weird little mall at Dundas and Dufferin, no, Dundas and Bloor. And he was this dude who was really ripped, but he had a weird haircut and a very closed face and just looked like a little weirdo, like a weirdo nerd who just was funneling his neurosis into exercise. It just didn't seem cool. And I feel like if I was ever super muscular, that's kind of what that would be like. That's what that would mean. It's like I just took it too far and I'm really compensating and just being strange. No offense to that guy. I don't know. I don't mean him any harm. It's just that's the feeling that I had when I saw him. Is not oh, this looks like a cool guy. He'd be fun to hang out with. He looked super not fun to hang out with. But yeah, it's just this little bit of definition goes a long way. I think also it's happened so fast because I'm skinny. I keep reading about people say abs, because I'm how do I have abs already? What the fuck? But it's just that everyone has abs. Everyone has those muscles. And really, it's being skinny is the main way to get your abs visible. You just can't have a lot of fat because it obscures them. The actual ab muscles are not that big a deal. They're right there. I don't have a six pack or whatever, but I was just thinking with my arms and just the way they look and the way my shoulders look, they look normal, they look like what they're supposed to look like. They have this definition, which really just makes me feel like all this time before this, I was just emaciated, this is how I look now is just the bare minimum of how I would look if, again, I was just outside all day, if I was a hunter or a gatherer and I just had to do basic lifting and using the arms. I remember when I got the job as a projectionist, the hardest part for the first 2 or 3 days was holding my arms up to thread the projectors, because it's a pretty complicated process, especially at first. It's hard to do. Just holding my hands at head level and working on stuff, just having my arms up, I could barely do. It wore me out. Or whenever I do have a girlfriend, it's just I don't know, fucking isn't that different from push-ups in some ways? You gotta hold yourself up if you're on top. And yeah, my arms would just get tired out, and it's sad. How in the fuck? What is wrong with this world? How did I get to be 30 fucking 5 years old and not know? You need to do some exercise just to be normal, just to be who you actually are. It's fucking nuts. All right, that is enough of that. Back to my stuff.
My blood is a flood of rubies. these precious stones. It keeps my veins hot. The fire's found a home in me. I move through town. I'm quiet like a fire. And my necklace is a rope. I tie it and untie. Talk to me, but nothing ever hits. So people talk to me, and all the voices just burn home. I'm going in. This is the start of how it all ends. They used to shout my name, now they whisper it. I'm speeding up, and this is the red, orange, yellow flicker.
Alright man, my big day is over. I was pretty amazed with how many people showed up. Mike was there, Craig and Lily were there, Brad was there, Matt. It was pretty cool. Kind of hung around for the day. It's a little weird because I'm not really a video game guy. You know, I didn't actually make a video game or anything. I guess it limits my networking potential, but you know, some people told me they'd like my intro and stuff, that it was very natural, which I think is probably a euphemism for seems unrehearsed. But, yeah, I don't know, weird kind of day, because now that's done, so I mean the stress of it is over, but I really don't have much going on the horizon now. I'm just like, no, here we are, now what am I doing? And it literally gets dark by 5:30 this time of year in Canada. Insane. So just like as soon as I leave the place, you know, just it's still not very late, but it's so dark, and I'm just exhausted. There was like a little after shindig, but I just was like, I just can't. Got up way too early, way too out of it. I drank a coffee. I haven't had caffeine in like 3 weeks, so it really did perk me up. But now that's worn off too. So I guess I feel kind of just sort of a little blasé now, a little tired and lonely and a bit hungry. But anyway, the whole thing was, you know, filmed and recorded and stuff, but instead of waiting for that to come out, I just recorded the audio with my own little thing, so I'll probably just use that to throw on here at the end. the finished result. I don't know that I have a future as a public speaker or anything, but it went okay, and it was a kind of a cool thing. That's all for this episode. Here is the little intro. Oh, and I forgot, I should mention before Plotkin's thing, they had like a public exhibition of this game called Aisle, like an aisle in a grocery store. That's like kind of a fancy, poetic-y game, so that's why that gets referenced as like how modern games are fancy pants, where 80s games were not. Mostly.
Okay, so introducing Andrew Plotkin. He is Keith McNally, creator of the podcast XO. Keith?
Okay. Hey, public speaking, right? Very exciting. When you agree to do these things, you don't really think about it. You're like, yeah, I'll do that. And then you're here standing in front of people at the library, and it's weird. So this kind of thing, wordplay, I came here last year without knowing any of the organizers. I just came in, and I was like, wow, this is so great. Like, this is the kind of thing that makes me really love living in Toronto. Like, it's such a cool event, and we just kind of take over the library. But at the same time, there's a lot of people here that are just using the library, you know? Or sometimes people just come in to get out of the sun or whatever is going on out there. It's kind of a general crowd. So I'm going to spend a few minutes just talking a little bit about interactive fiction and about Andrew Plotkin's work and just make sure we're all on the same page. I'm not too close to the mic, but can everyone hear me?
Closer?
Yeah. All right. Closer to the mic. There we go. Luckily, that was all just rambling and you didn't miss a thing. So interactive fiction used to be called text adventures, and it had its first big heyday back in the 80s. And that's when my family got our first personal computer. You know, it was one of the big beige boxes with a green and black monochrome screen. It was basically like a really expensive Game Boy, and probably about the same power as a Game Boy, which is weird because it was like $3,000. But it used those 5 1/4 inch discs, and software piracy was rampant then, as I guess it is now. So my dad would come home with just boxes full of these games for us to play, me and my brother, and we'd go through them and try them out. But none of the games, you know, had very good graphics back then, or even if they did, it was green and black, so whatever. Really, the best games of the time, and like definitely the most sophisticated games, were the games that didn't even have graphics. They were just text. And I don't know if you ever played any of those 80s text adventures, but just as an example, they weren't fancy like Aisle. It would be more like, you turn on this game and it says, you awaken in a dimly lit room. There's a desk here with a lamp on it and exits to the east, west, and south. Like, they loved cardinal directions and everything was very, you know, specific, 80s computing. So you type get lamp and the game would say you pick up the lamp. And you type go east and the game would say you go east into a pitch black corridor where you fall down some stairs and break your neck. If only you had a light source, game over. And that's when we started to realize, like, these games are really hard. It wasn't enough to pick up a lamp. It wasn't enough to turn on the lamp. You had to find a wick for the lamp. You had to get lighter fluid, and that wasn't gonna work, so you had to find gasoline and probably a flint or something. Like, just impossible. I think me and my brother probably completed, I'm gonna say, I think 0 of those games. But they were our favorites, we loved them. But then we got a new computer and another new computer, and graphics got better and better, and the text games just kind of, they sort of drifted away. They became not really financially viable anymore. Maybe because everyone was stealing them, sorry. But they weren't gone for too long because then the internet rose up. And you might not be surprised to hear that early adopters of the internet are the kind of people that love extremely regimented, incredibly impossible text-based video games. So they would meet on news groups and talk about these games, and they called them interactive fiction. I mean, that name had been around, but that's when it really caught on, and that's what people still call them now. And they realized they didn't just have to talk about the old games. They were like, we can just make our own games for each other to play. And kind of the weird irony is that the golden age of text adventures, it wasn't the 80s when you could get paid to make these games. It was the internet age when no one was getting paid. Because money kind of gets in the way. It's like if you're trying to make money on a game, you look at what the last game did, and you don't want to mess with that too much. Whereas now, it was just people making games for their peers. Like, they wanted to mess with the formula. They wanted to see what interactive fiction could do so that their games would stand out, and people would go like, man, that game was really cool. And enough people
started making these games that a competition started. And now every year they give awards to the people that made the most interesting games. So I know the amount of awards someone's won is not necessarily the best way to describe their creative output, but Andrew Plotkin has won more awards for his games than anybody else. And I think that's worth mentioning. I mean, you can't give awards to yourself, you know? So year after year, people played Andrew's games and they were like, man, that was really good. We've got to give him a couple more awards. And, you know, they just keep building up. He was one of the first authors to really write games that had like a poetic feel, like they started to become like what Isle is. And just really well-written games and games that had a really strong sense of place. He has this game called A Change in the Weather. It's basically just about being trapped in a rainstorm, but as the day turns to night and the weather gets worse and worse and the descriptions of the environments change to show how the weather is affecting them, and when lightning strikes, like, this game has no graphics, it has no sound, but like you're there. You're there like when you read a book, but kind of a little better because it's like you're in it, you know, like you're doing that stuff. And he really experimented too with like the nature of what these games are. He has a game called Spider and Web. Starts where you're in front of a locked door, and you're like, all right, figure out the puzzle, see what I should do. But after a few missteps, you suddenly, the game switches, and you're in an interrogation chamber, you're strapped to a chair. And your interrogator says, hey, no, that's not what happened. Look, we know you broke into this facility, we caught you, now tell us how you did it. And you realize that what this game is you're telling a story to your interrogator about how you broke into his facility. And it has to be a story that he's going to buy, but it has to hold back enough details to get you out of the situation you're in now. And it's just like, that's crazy, you know? Like, sometimes when I review games to myself, I just think, like, would I have ever been able to think of this myself? And with Spider and Web, there's no way. I would never. I just would never. So his games have had a huge influence. Like, you can see the influence just kind of cascade throughout the years of people's games. But when I ask people that are really involved in interactive fiction what they thought I should say about Andrew Plotkin, he said it's not even necessarily the games that are the biggest contribution that he's made. It's the tech work he's done behind the scenes that's a little more thankless and a little less visible. And it's something I don't really understand that much. Like, I went on the IF wiki and looked it up, and it's all these really weird named programs that are hard to pronounce. But basically, he's one of a very few people that have really kept the tech side of interactive fiction kind of at the forefront and made it so these games can be played on different platforms and that the games themselves are more robust. And he's just really, just the amount he's done for interactive fiction, it's crazy. So he's here today to talk about Hadean Lands, his new game that just came out for iPhone, and I feel like that game kind of encapsulates all this stuff. Like, the game itself stretches the boundaries of what a text game can do. It's on this more accessible platform of the iPhone, so more people can find it. It even kind of harkens back to like those glory days of the 80s, like maybe you can make money again from one of these games. And on top of all that, the software that he wrote to make this game, he's released to the public as open source. So anyone else that wants to make a text game, interactive fiction game for the iPhone can go down the path that he's already blazed. So like I said, just the amount he gives to the interactive fiction community, it's just ridiculous. And we're really lucky to have him here today and just in general. So ladies and gentlemen, if you could, please welcome Andrew Plotkin.
Naked. Maybe you are not. next to me. Dissolve recorded history. Start tomorrow morning. Did you forget? Or were your kisses my final warning? Popping off your smile easy. What was I supposed to say? Hits the ground and it dies easy. Why did I decide to stay?
So just to finish off this day, I got home. I was really exhausted. I figured I'll just crash out and go straight to bed. But instead, I started working on editing this podcast and this XO that I'm doing right now. And it's like this was the last kind of big thing I sort of had on the horizon. Now I don't have any particular stuff coming up in the nearish future. And yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of. Instead of being like a relaxing feeling, like, nothing getting in my way, I can just work on my stuff. I don't know, it's just so hard to be self-motivated, and I've been working on my own stuff for so long, and it seems like very little of it is really clicking. Man, it does seem like it might be kind of nice if tomorrow I just had something I had to do, you know? Some people I had to meet and some stuff I had to work on. So that's how I feel at the end of the day. I think I need more plates spinning, man. I need to get life kicked up a gear. All right, nighty night.